Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Musicals Told Me Everything I Know, where we try and learn everything that musical theatre can teach us. I'm Zane C. Weber, and with me tonight is...
Julie Eisentrager.
And our special guest this week is...
Josh Tia.
Josh is back.
Hi, Josh.
Hi.
And what musical do you want us to talk about this week, Josh?
Today, we will be talking about The Wild Party.
Specifically...
Andrew Lipper's version.
Andrew Lipper's version. So, for those of you who are uninitiated in the world of musicals called The Wild Party, there are, in fact, two that were on the Broadway at the same time. On the Way of the Broad, both based on the same poem, but one's by Lacusa. And one is by Andrew Lipper. Very different styles. And we're talking about Josh's favorite, Andrew Lipper. But before we do that, because we do have our usual get to know you quiz, but Josh has been here before. You've been here before. So I guess Julie and I will just have a lightning round of what are we going to cast Josh as?
Uh-oh. Let's say Emmett in Legally Blonde.
Timon in Lion King.
Oh, good one.
Yeah.
Good one. What's the dude in Adam's Family?
Gomez? Festa?
No. Oh, the straight-laced dude.
I cannot remember his name off the top of my head.
Yeah, no, that dude though. Continue.
Zazu from The Lion King.
Stop it. Oh my God, another good one for Josh. I see it. Anyone from Book of Mormon?
Hello.
Apart from the African guys.
Apart from the warlord, you mean?
Yeah.
Actually, I think you would make a funny Cunningham.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that would be interesting.
I would be down to play any of the Mormons.
I would like the Mormon in Turn It Off, that one as well.
Oh, yeah.
That'd be funny.
I'm going to say Rod.
From?
Avenue Q.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a dream role.
Dr. Potomar, waitress.
Oh.
Because, guys.
A little young, but he could grow into it.
A little young, he will be a doctor soon.
But still,
not of medicine, but
Dr. Potom is meant to be like an older doctor, like a middle-aged sort of doctor. Like
doesn't have to be.
Josh is far from middle-aged.
Some makeup, he's ready.
All right. Are you satisfied, Josh? Have we complimented you enough?
Yeah.
Thanks, guys. Simba. Simba from Lion King.
I'll say one-man show, The Lion King, Josh Tia.
Yeah, I'll say Nala then.
Guys, I'm ready.
All right. Well, now that we've got to know Josh even better, or at least what Julie and I think of Josh.
Oh, Seymour.
Oh, yes, please.
Yeah.
Yes, please.
Yeah, you're welcome.
All right. Well, let's take a little break and we will dive straight into Andrew Lipper's Wild Party. All right, Josh, so what can you tell us about Andrew Lipper's Wild Party?
Well, Zane, Andrew Lipper's Wild Party is based off a narrative poem that was written by Joseph Moncure March, and that original poem was written in 1928. And it's a story that's largely centered around a pair of love triangles involving four main characters, Queenie, Burrs, Kate, and Mr. Black.
Mr. Black.
Mr. Black.
Racist.
We all okay. done. And so anyway, this the whole story unfolds at a debauched party with other colorful characters and party guests add to the drama that is sort of centered around these four characters all involved in this essentially basically chaos of love and broken relationships. And so the original production of Andrew Lippert's Wild Party debuted on Broadway, off-Broadway, on the 24th of February in 2000, and it only ran for 54 performances.
Yeah, and it suffered for the competition.
It did, yeah. It's such a pity, but like I think just the fact that those two things came at the same time and there was just such a contrast between them, it really, yeah. They didn't do well, the original production only ran for 54 performances. I'm not sure if I just said that or not.
You did.
I did. Whoops, the daisies, and it didn't get very good reviews. However, it did receive a number of awards for off-Broadway shows, including Outstanding Musical by Drama Desk and the Outer Critic Circles. It got Best Scenic Costume and Lighting Design for the Lucille Lortel Awards and also Best Choreography for the Obie Awards.
Yeah.
And what is interesting about the musical's legacy is that... Oh, we've already talked about that. Yeah, and I guess like in reference to the Lacusa version, I think the two shows are just very stylistically different. So like the Lacusa version... it's very vaudeville in terms of its style, very jazzy, very vaudeville. Whereas, Andrew Lippert's version, it does have a lot of jazz in it, but it's also very musical theater centric and has a lot of pop rock and gospel influences, which really make it stylistically diverse.
Narratively, the two are separate in a very similar way, in that Lacusa's is very much about like these individual characters and their acts and their moment on stage, whereas Lippers is about this one driven story all the way through.
Yeah.
So the year that it debuted off Broadway, which was 2000, Lacusa's Wild Party was nominated for Best Musical. It didn't win. So obviously I think because Lacusa came out first, it kind of got ahead of what they were going to say about Lippers' Wild Party. But I just want to spend a couple seconds talking about the 2000 Tony Awards. So the 54th annual Tony Awards.
Oh no.
There were four nominations. One is Lacusa's Wild Party, of course. Swing! Which is a fun musical, but it is basically just a musical about swing dancing.
I've heard music from that.
Yeah.
Which is weird.
There's a couple of them. Hit Me With a Hot Note and Two and Four. Yeah.
Two and Four. Yeah. Yes.
That's probably the ones that pop up the most.
Yeah.
Weird.
James Joyce's The Dead, which is a musical set around James Joyce's The Dead, which is like a like an Irish dinner party sort of thing with opera. It's very obscure. But the winner, an even more obscure musical title called Contact. Has
aliens?
Anyone ever heard of that?
No.
The poster for this.
Is it about either? I've got two ideas here. It's either about aliens or B, it's about a mum trying to contact school books in January. Oh, no, well, like December, early January, and they get bubbles and then her frustration of the bubbles in the contact.
Wait,
it was a good guess. It was a good guess, Julie. Now what I'm going to do is I'm going to describe the poster to you and please describe to me what you think it is again.
All right.
So the poster has a man sitting on a stool and he's kind of in a tux after the party. So he's just kind of got the vest,
disheveled,
his shirt's undone. And then on the other side of the poster, up the top is a woman dressed in a yellow, I want to say negligee, with like a yellow scarf wrapped around her, obviously in the middle, mid-leap of a jump. And across the top in plain red, lowercase Arial font is the name of the show, Contact. Now, what do you think it's about?
I'm not loving the visual.
The background is all white as well, stark white. Oy, with these two figures
even
on it.
Worse. Okay, well, I want to say it is La La Land. Called Contact.
Mm-mm. All right. And Josh, any ideas?
Oh, I don't know.
Are you back to the mum contacting the school books?
No, it just doesn't evoke any sense of what the musical's about.
Okay, well, let me tell you what it is about. Contact is a musical dance play, in inverted commas.
Already hate it.
That was developed by Susan Stroman and John Weidman, with its book, in inverted commas, by Weidman, and both choreography and direction by Stroman. It ran both off-Broadway and on-Broadway in 1999 to 2002, and it consists of three separate one-act dance plays.
Oh, that sounds
what
awful.
Even is a dance play?
That
is
awful.
It a musical? It is not. In fact, after it won Best Musical, the Tonys introduced a new category for things like this called Best Special Theatrical Event. Because
wow.
It's not a musical.
Sounds like someone, like, in hindsight was like, we made a mistake.
Yeah. And so I had never heard of this until researching this episode, and it is interesting, an interesting concept.
Yeah.
Three one-act dance plays.
I'm mad that you would choose that over Andrew Lipper's Wild Party.
Well, Andrew Lipper's actually never went to Broadway. It only went off Broadway, so
he
never qualified. But the Lacusa one did, and obviously, like, that, I would put that higher than this 3 1-act dance play that I've never heard of before. So I can't make a judgment, but
three
still.
Acts.
Yeah. Okay, so back to the Wild Party. There's never been really I've never read anything that's actually nailed down why it was two musicals with the same name based around the same characters and the same subject matter were able to be produced at the same time.
I feel like what happened was Lacusa and Lipper were, like, at a party one night, got so drunk, and then in their drunken states together discussed how it'd be awesome to write a musical based on the source material, and then got home, woke up the next day, hungover, like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to write a musical on The Wild Party.
And they never spoke again until they both opened in New York.
Look, I think that has to be the only explanation.
And collectively went, damn it.
Well, yeah. Well, particularly Lipper, really hope to see this on Broadway at some point. I think it's a show worthy. But we'll get into that. Do you want to continue on to plot?
Yes.
Yeah,
please.
Let's do
it. Let's take a break and come back with plot. All right, so let's discuss the story of Wild Party. So, like you said, it's about this kind of foursome. So we've got Queenie, we've got her husband Burz. Now they're both big vaudevillian celebrities, basically, and they are both oversexed and very intense personalities. And they had rough pasts until they found each other, and they kind of latched onto each other, and they've been together ever since.
Yeah.
But now that they've been married and happy, Queenie is getting a little restless, and so she wants to throw a party to liven things up again. And so, of course, she invites this parade of interesting types. You get a lesbian, you get a hitman.
What an interesting type.
In the 1920s, yeah, it was
in the
lesbianism.
1920s, everyone was doing everyone. It was massive coke parties, like.
Yeah, and that's kind of what this is about. Like,
we only got more uptight.
We get a really kind of roaring party, and that's kind of what the poem was about, the underworld of these roaring 20s parties. So we get Madeline the lesbian, Eddie the thug, May the dimwit, Jackie the dancer, the lover brothers DeMano, Dolores the hooker, and Nadine the minor. And not minor, the minor as in she is underage.
Either
not
way.
Out hunting for
either
for
way,
coal.
It's bad. I prefer if she's a diamond miner.
Yeah. So, and at the very beginning, Queenie announces that she's out to basically teach Burz a lesson. So Kate arrives with her new friend, Mr. Black. Now, Kate is an ex of Burz, and so Kate, you know, she's there. Queenie's quite taken with Black as well, so she makes her move on him while and Kate takes him away to meet the other guests. So Queenie's got her eyes set on Black. Things progress, and Julie is doing her hair, so sorry if I'm just a little bit distracted. Queenie makes her move on Black, and Burz does not like this, of course, and so things break down into almost a fist fight, which then Queenie it's broken up by the whole company dancing the Juggernaut, which is a big dance number.
That's
in the
how
middle
I break
of the
up
show.
Fights usually is by dancing Juggernaut.
Initiate a cheeky dance yeah. break.
Well, it's very hard to have a fight when people are dancing at you from
and
all
then
directions.
When I want to fight, I go da.
So after the fight, to get back at Queenie, who has been after Mr. Black, Burz grabs Nadine, the miner, and makes out with her. This enrages Kate, who throws the girl to the ground by her hair. Madeline, the lesbian, rushes in to help the girl. Burz cuts into Mr. Black and Queenie's dancing and gets her to himself and tells Queenie to stay away from Mr. Black, and Queenie says that she'll do whatever she wants.
I do what I want.
Yeah. So, and then that almost gets physical as he threatens to hurt her. But then Oscar and Phil, the D'Amano brothers, the Lover brothers. They're introduced as the Lover brothers.
Okay,
I think it's like hinted at that they're brothers but also like together as
well. It could also be that they are lovers that go under the guise of just being brothers.
Brothers!
Brothers from another mothers.
So Burz, now that he knows that people are watching, has released Queenie. So after this, Mr. Black approaches Queenie and pointedly asks why she stays with an abusive man. And she sings about it, of course.
As long as he... No?
Maybe I like it this way.
Ah, close.
Maybe I like it. I can't get it. It's gone. Elsewhere, Kate is attempting to seduce Burz. He refuses her advances and expresses his deepest, darkest feelings for Queenie, that she is in fact driving him crazy.
Ooh.
Yeah, so
cool.
Burz is a dark character, and it kind of really descends into the darkest place he could by the end of the musical. So Kate tries to kiss him, but he pushes her away. Black kisses Queenie, and she embraces him. End of Act One. So things are going down.
Yeah.
Act Two. So the party is raging on, and Kate is alone reflecting on her youthful indulgence, because she used to be I guess we'll call it lady of the night, a whore, a hooker. She calls herself a lot of names in this, but now she seems to have climbed the social ladder a little bit and is quite proud of that achievement. Queenie's in the bathroom taking some time to herself, and she's angry that she's confided in Black. Because he's a stranger, but she recognizes that he is a good person, which is more than can be said for most of the characters in the show, and that she is attracted to him. Black comes into the bathroom with a drink, and they share a moment as Black says how much he likes Queenie. And then Burz comes in seeking Queenie's attention, and he apologizes for his behavior and asks for her forgiveness. But before she can respond, Kate arrives, and she unsuccessfully tries to draw Burz back in onto the dance floor, and both men pull for her affections and devotions. Mr. Black asks Queenie to leave the apartment with him.
Ooh.
Burz asks her to stop the party and let them return to their isolation, and Queenie does neither.
He's a controlling man. She's a free spirit. What you gonna do?
She's a manipulative spirit, I think.
Yeah.
So Burz lashes out and physically threatens her, which causes Queenie to leave the bathroom, followed by Black. So it's at this point you see that Burz is really kind of breaking down, and that he has a song here, which is really kind of about him doing just that, kind of going into manic entertainment clown mode as he emotionally disintegrates. So after that, he begins to hallucinate, hearing Queenie's voices in his head, and thinking that May is Queenie, he attacks her, which angers her boyfriend, Eddie the Thug, and a fight breaks out.
Yep. This doesn't sound good.
So Mr. Black and Queenie come to find Eddie beating Burz, and Queenie's afraid that Burz will be killed if it's not stopped. And out of concern, Black rushes in and knocks Eddie unconscious with a chair. May turns to Eddie, and Kate comes to the aid of the passed out Burz. So Mr. Black kind of realizes what's going on at this point and says to Queenie that he's going to leave. But Queenie doesn't want to let him go and takes him to the bedroom. And in a moment of passion, the two begin making love, which all the guests in the living room soon follow suit. So
I've not been to many parties like that.
No, well, that's the thing. Like, the party keeps getting wilder and wilder and wilder and wilder.
Is that why it's called Wild Party?
That's why it's called the Wild Party.
Wink, wink. Get it.
Okay, so the next morning, as everyone lies asleep, Kate wakes up Burz, who's beside her. Queenie is absent, and Burz wants to know what's going on. So he staggers to the bedroom to find her in bed with Black. When they wake up, Queenie recoils in shock, and Black jumps up and attempts to tackle Burz but fails. Burz goes and gets a gun from the dresser where, as per Chicago, they are kept. and full of rage, he vacillates between trying to force Queenie to make a choice between the two men, and he threatens to either kill Black or himself. So Black realizes that Burz is about to make a decision and takes a chance and lunges at Burz. The gun goes off. Burz is dead. And fearing that Mr. Black will now be executed for the death, Queenie urges him to flee, and before leaving, Black professes his love for her. Queenie, now having lost both men, questions how things managed to reach that point, and she exits the apartment with her coat. And that's the end of the show.
Damn. It's just such a wild, wild party.
Things got a bit out of hand, didn't they?
Yeah. And it starts out like the good out of hand, and then you get like a hint of bad, but then it gets back to good, and then you get another bigger hint of bad, and then back to good, and then it goes totally crazy. Everyone has sex, and then the morning after is when they have to deal with the repercussions of what's going on. And
usually is what you have to deal with the morning after.
So I mean, for me, I love the Burz character. I think he's one of the most interesting male characters, because he's pretty passive in this story. Like, he's not the one with a goal to achieve. He's just having things done to him, and he's really crumbling under the pressure. In the same way, I really love Queenie as a female character, because it's usually the male story to be manipulating people to get what you want from them. Mm. And I think that's a really interesting switch of the gender dynamic that we usually see in stories.
Mm. Yeah.
Good. All right. Well, that's the story. Any questions? Did anyone not understand anything? Shall we move on to the music?
We can move on to the music.
Let's move on to the music. All right, so the songs and the music are really what make me love this musical, so let's have a look at them. We start out with Queenie Was a Blonde. Now, this really introduces all the kind of the big characters, well, Queenie and Burz and their relationship. It's the backstory, exposition, but it's super fun. So it's Queenie, Burz, and the company. And then we go Out of the Blue, which is Queenie convincing Burrs to have a party. And then we get What a Party.
What a Party.
And this is where we literally get the roll call. We get the lesbian. We get Eddie the Thug. We get May the Dimwit, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Raise the Roof. What's this one about, Josh?
It's just I think it's just Queenie inciting some chaos in the party. I think it's like, okay, we here.
Yeah,
let's party. Get going. Yeah.
Where's the cocaine? And then we have Look at Me Now, which is Kate. Kate arriving with Mr. Black.
Mm.
Yeah. Poor child, Black, Burrs, Kate, and Queenie.
So this is just like, this starts with Mr. Black just sort of like realizing that Queenie is unhappy and then him sort of coming to comfort her, I think. And then it's sort of,
yeah.
But then sort of like, then it also becomes this thing where Burrs is sort of like looking at Queenie and he's like expressing how, like his unhappiness in their relationship. And then Kate's also watching over this. And then so all of them are reflecting on the awkward love square that they're all trapped in. Yeah.
So it's also the first ballad of the show.
Yes.
Yeah. And then we get into Old Fashioned Love Story,
which
you hear at auditions all the time because it's a really funny female character song, which is
They're not wrong.
And they have notably left a word out of the title, so it pays off in the show. As the phrase in the song is an old-fashioned lesbian love story.
Let's be honest.
Let's be honest, everyone. By now, the room was moving, which is, again, just a way to escalate the franticness of the room and what's going on at the party.
It's kind of like the company throughout the show kind of play as like a Greek chorus where they sort of like they sort of narrate and catch the audience up with what's happening.
Yeah.
At various points. And this is one of those kind of songs that serves that purpose.
And of course that's where the confrontation happens. And then we get into the juggernaut with Queenie Black, Kate Burrs and the company. And again, this is the big kind of dance number, the Charleston dance number. And this is where you get a lot of kind of the pop rock sort of feel moving in with the juggernaut, replacing just the kind of brassy jazz that we've had up till now.
But still, I would still class it all as jazz.
Yeah, it's just all jazz the whole way through.
It's one of those things that when it says it's a jazz musical, it actually is.
Yeah.
Mm.
Which is so nice.
I think just as soon as you put an electric guitar in there, it kind of moves a little bit towards the rock for me. But I would still, it's jazz the whole way through.
Yeah.
And then we have Wild, Wild Party, the titular song of the show.
Guys, he said digital.
The D'Amano Brothers, Queenie Burrs and the company. Then we have a really fun song. And it's kind of a little bit of a charm song. It takes you away from the drama of everything. Two of a Kind, Eddie and May. Now, this is just after the neighbors have complained and they've shamed the neighbors out and they're like, in true vaudeville style, they've got the floor, so they're going to put on a little bit of a show. And it's like, it's just the contrast between the thug and the little ditzy girl. And by little ditzy girl, I mean woman who's fully consenting to be there. Because there is underage minor at the party, so we have to kind of cut between keep that distinction there. Maybe I Like It This Way.
This song's dark.
It is.
She's a dark song.
And I mean, there is a song very similar to this in Reefer Madness, which is basically I hate to call her the lead female, but she's the drug dealer's wife, and she says, I'm only here because I want to be here, but I probably shouldn't be here. Mm. In that musical, it's played for a joke. Mm-hmm. In this musical, it's deadly serious.
It's dark. Like, I mean, like, apart from this musical being all about, like, just people with weird character traits and drugs and debauched drinking and parties and stuff, like there's this whole like undercurrent of like domestic violence and being trapped in a relationship that you don't like, you don't want to be in, but you're also too scared of leaving or any other alternative.
Yeah, and yeah. It's really interesting because both Burrs and Queenie seem to feel trapped in this situation that they're 100% creating and aware that they're creating it.
Yeah.
Yeah, so it's a really interesting story to explore. And then we have Burrs and Queenie, what is it about her? And that's where we end Act 1. Where basically they're in separate rooms, of course, but they're both singing about their relationship and how they're affecting each other.
Mm.
Shall we move on to Act 2?
Let's move on to Act 2.
I don't see why not.
The life of the party. Here we go. This is another audition song that you hear a lot.
Yeah. I'd love to audition with this song. It's such a good song. Adina at her best.
And of course, it's just sung by a woman descending a very tall case of stairs. Who is this man? Queenie, again. Another ballad, a ballady song. I mean, so many of these songs are so tied to the story. There's not really much to say about them. Mm. But I think it does bear saying that the music and story are so intrinsically linked is what makes this musical so great in my eyes.
Yeah.
Because it's very hard to break. Even the songs like we've spoken about that stand out and away from the story, like Two of a Kind, like Old Fashioned Love Story, they serve a purpose in the rhythm of the story. And it's not just for the sake of the musical that's like, okay, we need to bring down the tension here. Mm. The musical follows the exact same pacing and energy as the party itself. Mm. And I think that's a really great parallel that runs all the way through the musical, especially shown in the music.
Yeah. Lippa knew what he was doing. Shame that no one else realized.
So I'll Be Here, which is Black's song again.
Yeah. This song is smooth.
Yep.
This song is well smooth.
I mean, who doesn't want Mr. Black to sing that song to them? Now, this, Julie, you don't want Mr. Black to sing that song to
them? I don't really care.
No?
No. Don't like Mr. Black? Take it, leave it.
You don't want to, you're more of a Madeline type, rather Mr. Black?
I think tonight I might be.
Yeah? All right. That's fine. We don't judge here.
I just lost Josh.
Now this is easily my favorite song. Mm. Let Me Drown. Both of Burr's songs are super powerful to me, and I think it's there are very few songs in the Broadway, or in the, I guess, in musical theater that are about characters just losing everything, losing their mind, losing everything in their life. Like you have Rose's Turn, and there are a few others, but
Jekyll.
This is, yeah, but like even then control? you have Hyde, the personification of another character, kind of gaining everything.
I see what you're saying. Yeah.
So Let Me Drown is really a really fun, I say fun, it's super dark and disturbing, but it's really interesting way to illustrate Burrs' position.
It's kind of like, it's a bit hysterical, isn't it? Because he's sort
absolutely.
Of like, he's going into being
a clown.
Yeah. Losing the plot, but also just trying to like lighten the mood as well.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's like, well, if we're here to party, let's go crazy.
Yeah.
and it's so like Queenie's instigated this whole party to kind of like hurt Burrs or manipulate Burrs. And like he's the one that's turning down Kate, turning down all these opportunities where Queenie is actually like physically separating herself from Burrs. And it's like, Queenie, come on now. Tell me something, which is Queenie in Black. Again, this is just asking the question why.
Mm.
Again, Come With Me, Black Queenie and the Company. This is the orgy song.
Oh, so it actually is a suggestion.
There's a little bit of innuendo in the title.
Come
so
with
it starts
me.
Out with Black and Queenie, but then the Company join in at the end as well. Jackie's Last Dance, which is just an instrumental, which is in the morning before Burrs basically discovers Queenie and Black. Then Make Me Happy, which is Burrs, Black and Queenie. Now, this is where he's deciding whether or not to kill Black or kill himself. Mm. And at the end, that's where Black is basically sent away and Queenie... it's implied that Queenie's going to take the fall for killing Burrs. And then how did it come to this? Queenie Was a Blonde reprise, which is Queenie alone on the stage. Just like, how did it come to this?
Oh, Queenie. I wonder.
Yeah, Queenie.
Oh, I wonder.
Yeah, we've got some news for you, Queenie.
And I would have gotten away with it too.
If only I hadn't done all of this, then all of this wouldn't have happened.
Whoops.
So, yeah, it's a dark ending, but it's just beautiful music all the way through. If you haven't listened to this one, please go and listen to it and then tell all your Broadway producer friends to put it back on Broadway, please.
And then while you're at it, get us some pro jobs on Broadway.
Cast me as Burrs, please. I would love to play Burrs.
I'll play Madeline.
Okay, yeah.
And I'll play Mr. Black, so we're sorted.
Done.
We've already got three cast members.
Guys. We're here already. All right. Well, speaking of which, let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk cast. Okay. So who was in this show?
Okay. Okay. I'll tell you. You give me $5 and I'll tell you.
Well, Patreons, if you want to hear who was in the cast of this show.
We should start doing that, just omitting segments, holding them for ransom. All right. Well, I guess I'll tell you anyway. Here's a little name you'll know. You ready?
Mm-hmm. I'm ready. Give me a name.
1997, as a workshop, Kristen Chenoweth was May.
That's pretty good casting.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Yeah, I'll give it right.
Tiny lady, powerhouse voice. Yep.
Yeah,
I'm there.
Right. The musical opened off Broadway, blah, blah. In the 2057 performances, it starred Julia Murney as Queenie.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I like this one. Brian D'Arcy James
as Burrs.
I wish he was a friend of the show.
One day he will be, Julie.
We'll
one
be
day
best
he
friends.
Will be.
Brian, if you're out there.
Dear Brian.
Dear dude. Taye Diggs as Mr. Black.
Again, yes. Pretty perfect casting.
And Idina Menzel as Kate.
Yes.
And Alex Corey as Madeline True. Yes. Just because I knew no one else would.
So they're also the ones that are on the cast recording.
On the cast recording, yes. Correct. What else have we got? Oh, the New York City's Encores Off Center featured Sutton Foster as Queenie.
That's pretty good casting as well.
Stephen Pascal as Burrs.
Oh, Pascal as, yeah.
Yeah.
I can see that.
Mm.
Yeah. He was a member of the original off-Broadway company as well.
Oh, okay. So just part of the ensemble.
Yeah, yeah. And then Brandon Victor Dixon.
I don't know that name.
Neither do I. As Mr. Black. And then every time I read this name. Jaquina?
Oh, yeah, Jaquina.
Jaquina as Kate?
Calicango. She has a great last name.
She does, and I just looked at it and was like, I can't do it. Lovely. I can't. Too late at night to say that name. As Kate, Miriam Shaw as Madeline True, and Ryan Andes as Eddie.
And that's it.
Yeah, it's not, bless its cotton socks.
Not enough shows.
Not enough shows.
Come back.
I am really surprised that this isn't more popular. And
I'm not though for some weird reason, like,
but the music is so good and the story is so exciting,
and I think the reason
it's not a huge cast either.
Yeah, I think the reason I can't picture it being any bigger than it is because I've not seen it. Like I want to see a visual to the songs that I've listened to and to the story that I know. I can't see it in my head. Maybe I just need a better imagination.
Do you have that? Do you have that condition where you don't have an imagination?
Definitely not. But you know what? Good. Kids these days.
All right.
What was like? So this is just a random thought in my head that I had the other day. Like, what? Like, could it like not come back as a revival because it's not old enough to be a revival? Do you know what I mean? Because like, you know, like how sort of like at the Tonys every year, there's like best new musical. And then there's like the best like revival. Like, would it, the reason be that it potentially couldn't?
When the revival doesn't need to be old.
It premiered off Broadway 2000. That's 18 years ago. It's
almost 20
years ago.
Was 1997.
Yeah.
I was seven.
To be fair, it did have the encores off center.
Yes.
That performance. And that was 2015.
Yeah.
So it is in people's minds. But yeah. And I know the rights have been on and off available, at least in Australia. Like they were available for a red hot minute, and before I could like jump on it, they were gone.
Because let's be honest, it would cost like almost nothing in terms of like set to put the show on.
It could be a single set show. Like you just need the one room, as long as you have like a bathroom and a bedroom somewhere there. Mm. It's, and yeah, it is kind of sold on the songs,
yeah,
and the story, and yeah, so. Someone someday will cast me as Burrs in the revival and we will be great. But until then, let's take a break, come back and talk about our dream cast. Ooh. All right. Who's in the best ever possible cast of The Wild Party, the Andrew Lippert Wild Party?
Okay, we're getting Sutton back. She's coming back as Queenie.
Okay.
Mr. Black, Zac Efron.
Yes, please.
Okay. I can live with that.
You're on board. And also
John C. Reilly for Burrs.
Yep, done. John Lithgow.
As
I'm joking.
You know who's really hot right now? Hugh Jackman. Let's get him back.
You know that if they did it, he would.
Oh yeah,
he would.
Totally.
Not even 100%. Funny. Don't joke about it.
I think they should do like a Wolverine Wild Party crossover. And so when he goes insane, he like literally claws out and like kills everyone.
See, that I would watch.
Why not just Mark Ruffalo and have the Hulk smash the place up?
Yes, Queen.
So what about May? So we've had Kristen Chenoweth. Some like just little girliest girl you can imagine.
Okay. All right. Well, not to do that, to go completely opposite.
Okay.
Just to mess things up.
Mm-hmm.
Jane Lynch.
No, Jane Lynch has to be
Madeline. Yeah, Madeline Drew.
She would make that hilarious. Mm. Because she's not like a great singer. She would just character it up. And I would love that.
Yeah, I'm on board because it was my suggestion.
Honestly, if we're doing opposed kind of, I think a Jane Lynch as Eddie would be funny.
Sure.
As the thug. So they're a lesbian couple.
Yeah.
Yeah,
or you could just have like a tiny man and a giant.
Even so, yeah.
All right, well, Danny DeVito.
Oh, I think that needs to happen.
It's disgusting. Hey, yeah. It makes you feel kind of sick, but you're into it.
Yeah.
I really loved Taye Diggs as Mr. Black.
Yeah.
But if we've got Zach there, then you know we've got Zach there. But Taye Diggs is kind of, because I fell in love with the cast recording, I think I can only really hear Taye Diggs when I listen to
it. It's because his voice is so stylized.
Yeah.
It's like, it's really difficult to think about what his songs in particular would sound like if it wasn't
anyone else, if someone sung it very straight rather than doing the riffs.
Actually, the same can be said for, I feel like, Adina. Well, maybe less Adina's songs because I guess you just have to belt. But like, I feel like both of those people, it's like whatever they sing always gets,
sounds like them.
Yeah.
Like that's their song sound.
Yeah. So then in that case, segue, who would you cast as Kate?
Well, that's an Ninja Lea Michele.
Your mouth.
No, I don't think Lea Michele is a good fit for Kate.
I feel like she's got the voice for it, but she doesn't have the bite for it.
Yeah. Kate's got to be life of the party, and Lea Michele doesn't give off that vibe at all.
Smooth of the party.
Who could just under the breath insults over there? You know, one day I hope Lea Michele is a friend of this podcast, Julie. What will you do then? When she says, Zane, please be in my Broadway show. And I'll go, yes, I will, friend of the show, Leah Michelle. And she'll say, but there's one condition, Zane, and it is that you are no longer friends with Julie Addison-Trager. And whatever. I'll have a very difficult decision to make then, Julie.
Really? I wouldn't have a just dump me. Go in the Broadway show.
And then when I'm famous, come back and pick you up out of the gutters like the little kitten that you are.
Yeah. I mean, she's not a little kitten. She's a manger cat.
Oh, damn.
All right. So any other names jump to mind?
Nah.
No?
Nah.
What I'm about dry. For Madeline? I would love to see Patty as Madeline.
Really?
Oh,
yeah. I think
that's
just...
I just love lesbian. Patty. Yeah, well, she's been around the block and she's just like all this time, can't
she's
find no one.
I really love because Madeline's just kind of like a like no nonsense, calling everyone out on their bullshit. Just
yep.
And yeah, I think that's really just someone that you can put a diva in there and just like, no, I don't like any of this, any of you. Yeah.
I can only think of stupid suggestions now, so.
That's fine. Well, we've done it. We've got a perfect cast probably that may or may not include Zac Efron. Let's
always
take a break, come back, and we'll talk top fives. All right, we've got to put this one on some top five lists. What top five list does it belong on?
Top five jazz musical.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd put top five Idina Menzel performances.
Yes.
Oh, because it's in Idina Menzel before she's like...
Before she was like real Idina Menzel.
Yeah.
Mm. Like she'd done Rent before this, but I think this was straight after Rent.
Yeah.
Ooh.
Yeah. Top five musicals based on a poem.
Oh, well, yeah.
Sutton Cats.
Well, also...
Cats being number one.
James Joyce's The Dead. Like the same year. Three musicals based on poems.
Oh. Awkward.
Top five male characters. Insane, crazy male characters. Sure. I'll put Burrs on that list.
As in violently insane?
Just like crazy.
Because
by the end of the music, he goes insane.
Sure.
Yeah.
Maybe like top five... plan that went terribly wrong situations.
Top five orgies.
Top five orgies. Bat Boy. Rent.
This.
This. Probably something else.
Hopefully
Cats.
Musicals.
Oh, dear.
Gross.
Top five songs for lesbians.
Yep.
Okay.
What like other ones
explicitly
are there?
For lesbians?
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, take me or leave me from Rent.
Yeah. That would probably be number one.
Number one. Yeah.
I think.
I just like that. It's like the way you said that made it sound like only lesbians could sing it, not a song as sung by a lesbian.
Well, I think it's a song about being a lesbian.
Sure.
So Take Me or Leave Me isn't technically, but I would put it on there still.
Oh, yeah.
Because it is about women dating women. So
true story. Yeah.
Anything else? Nothing else?
No, I just scrolled past a photo of Chad Michael Murray now. I can't think of anything.
Oh, dear.
I think that's good.
You know, I'm going to put it out there. This might be on my top five musicals, full stop.
What?
It's certainly.
Whoa.
Personal one.
Yeah.
Whoa.
Might be.
It's Xanadont.
Xanadont isn't on my top five. I love it.
Oh, okay.
But it's not on my top five favorite musicals of all time.
Wow. Okay.
This is.
Wow.
Avenue Q.
Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Little Shop.
Mind blown. Mm. Continue.
There's a lot of others that are fighting for that. So I think,
I would agree. It's definitely like, yeah, it's among the ones that are continually jostling for position.
And you know what? It definitely appears top five underappreciated musicals.
Correct. Would agree.
I'll put it on top five musicals I've never seen.
All right. I mean, that's
still a big
long list. Yeah. Hopefully, top five musicals that will eventually get a Broadway run.
Yeah, that need a comeback.
Because Little Shop of Horrors was on that list and it got a Broadway run. Big Fish was on that list and it got a Broadway run. It didn't do well. We don't talk about it. But I think this would do great on Broadway.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't particularly need to be as intimate as an off-Broadway would be. So, yeah.
And it's like, it's just like given, like, maybe like back then, I mean, maybe audiences were just pruder and it was kind of just like, ugh. But I think now the material, just because it is so just raw and sexy, and because like musical theater is definitely moving towards like more angsty theater, perhaps like it would do a lot better now because maybe. We like that angst in theater more.
I mean, if the Tony Awards are any indication, 2000 was a weird year.
Weren't writing anything in 99 because all previous years because we thought we'd all be dead by 2000.
That's true. The Y2K.
Y2K.
Yep. That solves it. So that's what's to blame for Wild Party not doing well.
Duh.
How did we not see it sooner?
I know.
All right. So unless we've got any other dramatic top fives to throw out of the last minute, no?
Nada.
I'm going to put Burrs on my top five bucket list roles for me.
Okay. I'm not putting Madeline on mine, but continue.
No. I don't think Madeline's on anyone's bucket list. But yeah, so let's take a break. We'll come back with lessons learned. All right. What lessons did the Wild Party teach us? I mean, there's a few real big obvious ones.
If someone invites you over for a party, just maybe, I don't know.
I think most of the guests that were there got what they wanted out of the party, which was just some fun and some sex and some dancing.
That sounds like the best kind of party
ever. I mean, I guess Queenie, come on now, Queenie.
Would you like to say Queenie again?
Queenie. Stop what you're doing. In case you get what you want, like you orchestrated this, and
don't wish too hard for what you want.
Exactly
and
right.
Get it.
Yeah,
maybe continuing for that. Blah 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 blah. Wow, mind blank. What was I going to say?
I think it was
very similar to what he said. Yeah.
He remembers. He remembers.
See?
Guys,
look at that.
Talk things through.
Yeah.
Just be open with your emotions and don't think that cheating on your partner is a good way to get them interested in you again. Might be a good life lesson learned.
Maybe the person who gives you what you want isn't the right person for you. isn't giving you what you need exactly because... Obviously, Burrs and Queenie is a toxic relationship, but they were so attracted to each other for exactly that. They crave that toxicity and examine that. Examine that in your relationships. Mm. People who are lucky enough to have them. With clowns or otherwise.
Oh.
Well, Burrs is a clown.
I know. It's just nasty. You know who else was a clown?
Who else is a clown? Ronald McDonald?
No, Jermaine Gacy.
All right.
Also a clown.
That was a weird connection to make there.
He's a clown and a mass murderer.
Oh, okay.
Oh.
Known well, as isn't a clown. A
mass murderer.
I know.
He only kills himself.
I'm just saying. All clowns right. are creepy.
But clowns are a little creepy. I'll give you that. Any other lessons? I mean, don't keep a gun in your bedroom dresser.
Oh.
I mean, that should go without saying.
I actually think that's not allowed either. I'm pretty sure you're meant to have them in gun cases.
In Australia, yeah. But that doesn't stop some people. Like, rules aren't always followed.
Silly, silly people.
Silly, silly people. I'm looking at you, America.
Don't put your undies and your guns in the same drawer.
It's true. The disaster can strike.
You put your incense and your undies in the same drawer so your undies smell like the incense. It's real good.
Oh, homemaking tips with Julie Eisenberger.
Spinoff podcast.
All right. Anything else? Jazz parties seem real fun until they get dark. I was going to say that.
They're real fun to the morning after.
Yeah, all right.
Everything's fun until the morning after.
Yeah. Everything's fine till the morning after. Anything else? I'm gonna stop.
I think we're good.
Yeah.
Yep.
I mean, I guess we learned that great musicals aren't always recognized in their time. Because poor Andrew Lipper and everyone else who was in it. Like there was a good cast and they were off Broadway and it still didn't get picked up. Yeah.
What are you gonna do?
Well, what I'm gonna do is I'm gonna listen to every musical that I can get my hands on, whether or not it was on Broadway or not.
Okay.
Yeah. That's how I discovered Wild Party.
Mm.
All right, let's take a break. We'll come back and we will say farewell. All right. Thank you for joining us, everyone. Thank you to our special guest, Josh, for bringing Andrew Lipper's Wild Party. Did you enjoy it?
It was an absolute joy.
Oh, I love this musical. Thank you again. And thanks, Julie, for coming.
You're so welcome.
Am I not?
Yeah. I had to stop a yawn to answer.
All right. If you want to find out more about us, you can find us on Facebook or on Twitter. You can send us an email at musicalstaughtmepodcast@gmail.com. You can find us online at thatsnotkindofproductions.com/MTMEIK. And you can subscribe and rate us and give us a review on iTunes or Google Play or Stitcher or any podcatcher that you choose. Now, we like 3-star reviews.
What?
We like 4-star reviews more.
What?
We like 5-star reviews even more than that.
The mostest.
But what we like the most is a review. A few words. You can leave us a scathing 5-star review and we will thank you for it.
Yeah, sure.
If you like listening to us and you want to support the podcast, maybe get a few bonus episodes and some extra goodies that we offer on our Patreon, you can go over to our Patreon at patreon.com/musicalstaughtmeeverythingiknow. And you, for $2 a month, get all our bonus episodes and the 2 test episodes we did at the start and a whole bunch of other goodies. But if you don't want to sign up for monthly contributions, just go to our merch site.
You can get merch. Sorry.
And you can get shirts. We have hoodies. We have hats. We have dog bandanas.
Yeah.
Pillows.
Phone cases.
Oh my goodness.
Anything you want.
Aprons?
Keep cups. Yeah. Laptop bags. Duffel bags.
What?
Yeah, babe.
I'm not sure if we have duffel bags.
We do.
We have duffel bags.
I swear this list legitimately keeps growing.
Yeah, it does.
There is nothing that we don't do for our listeners. So thank you for listening to us. And if you contribute in any way, thank you very much for that. But even if you can just tell a friend about the cool website that you're listening to and you want to nerd out about, just do that. And we'll catch you next week. Thanks for listening, everyone.
Bye.
So long.
Be bad?
Yes.
But that doesn't mean we can't learn from it. I'm Alex Smith.
And I'm James Keogh.
And on our new podcast, My Songs Suck,
we talk to writers and musicians who share with us some of their earlier, less good content and reflect on how far they've come.
If you want to get in on the fun, head to That's Not Canon Productions or find us on iTunes, Google Play, or whatever podcatcher you use.
My songs suck, because everyone makes mistakes.
Just make sure you record them.
That's Not Canon Productions podcast.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.